It's time for Power Hour.
Blue 20!
Your number one source for year-round Fighting Irish recruiting news.
Hot rock!
A premium subscription is just a click away at irishsportsdaily.com. And now,
hot!
Your Power Hour host.
He's good.
I love him.
Mike Frank.
All right, folks, welcome once again, everybody, to Irish Sports Daily Power Hour. I'm your host, Mike Frank. I'm here with my two co-hosts today in Matt Freeman and Jamie Uyama up there in Canada, but not for long. Jamie will be down here this week because there's coaches clinic and access for practice and stuff, so we'll get his thoughts as well on what's going on. Wanted to mention, you know, right now still a great time to sign up for irishsportsdaily.com, still running that special of $19.99. For now until August 1st, and now's when the good stuff happens. We get a good look on Saturday. We'll get a full day of watching practice, so we'll get some really good insight on that. There's pro day coming up. There's Friday's practice, although we can't report on anything that happens in Friday's practice. But, you know, again, we're allowed to form opinions and that type of stuff, so we're excited about our first look of what we can expect with the offense and defense at Notre Dame with these new coaches. So excited about that. So once again, sign up to our irishsportsdaily.com, go to the front page and click on the premium section there, and you can sign up for a subscription to irishsportsdaily.com. If you have any questions about the show, you can stop by the Huddle, our free message board on Irish Sports Daily. Go to the forum section there and click on the links and pull up the Huddle, and you can ask us whatever questions you want. Also wanted to mention once again, if you feel or you are interested in advertising on the podcast, you can email me at mikefrank18@sbcglobal.net. Once again, mikefrank18@sbcglobal.net. You can email me. I'll give you all the details as far as downloads and the rates and all that. I think we're real reasonable right now. Although I did get some good numbers this past week. I found a new place that generates the numbers better than what we had before, and we actually have more downloads than I thought. So I was pretty excited to hear about that. We're going to start getting into hopefully the national campaign. So excited about the way the podcast is growing, and we really appreciate any help you can give us. If you want to listen to the show, we would love nothing more than for you to share it with your friends via email. You can share it on Twitter. You can share it on Facebook. And if you go to the front page, there's always a story there. And down at the bottom, there's some icons there. You can just push the button there, and it'll share it on your Twitter or share it on your Facebook. So, all right, guys. Well, let's talk. Let's start with basketball. Not quite the ending that I think a lot of us were hoping for and wanting. Matt, you know, I really thought that they'd do a little bit better because they played so well in the ACC tournament. I thought we would see them play a little bit better. And to be honest, you know, I really don't think they played well in either game. I thought they played, you know, a little slow and lethargic and weren't very sharp. And that was kind of surprising to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think they definitely didn't play up to their expectations or even what their potential was, for sure. I do think that they probably got a little fatigued just because of that ACC tournament. Playing three games in 3 days isn't easy on the body. And, I mean, I know they got, 3-4 days off, but I mean, that's still pretty taxing. And then I think Bray's offense somewhat hurt them because he went small ball to kind of maximize their strengths of being smaller, but they don't run a whole lot of sets, and I think you got to run a couple of sets just to try to get VJ Beachum the ball in good spots. I know he had some good shots, but I mean, there's not a lot of flow to that offense at times, so I think that kind of hurt him too.
Yeah, you mentioned Beachum, and I don't want to single anybody out, but he really kind of struggled in the tournament and did not hit his shots, and he had a lot of open shots that at times he's kind of struggled all year with it, and it's been kind of crazy because he's such an athletic player. He's got a lot of talent, but it just, for whatever reason, he just couldn't put it together, and I feel bad for him because by all accounts he's a good guy. So, they had plenty of opportunities. You know, they really did have plenty of opportunities in that game. I talked about that West Virginia press, and people don't realize that's very difficult to defeat. And what it does is it wears you down, you know, and we'll talk about that here in a second, but it just really wears you down as a team. And I think that that's where you know, you don't shoot well because you're tired and you just, you know, your mechanics are off. And so we'll talk about that here in a second. Despite the loss, I mean, I really think this was a very good season for Notre Dame. I think it was, I'm not sure really it's going to push the needle as far as the national picture. But I think a lot of Irish fans, myself included, were expecting a lot worse this year. And I think this is one of Bray's better coaching jobs. I think, you know, when you look at the talent that he had on hand and the guys coming back and experience, I'm quite surprised they did as well as they did.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you can finish second in a league with Duke, North Carolina, Louisville, just a couple of the other rising ACC schools like Notre Dame, I think that's a successful season. I mean, that's not an easy league just to play on the road by any means. So I think that does say something, but I do tend to agree with you that it likely doesn't move the needle in terms of them landing more recruits or better recruits or just kind of the national respect just because they went out the first weekend of the tournament. And I think if they would have made another Elite Eight or at least a Sweet 16, I think that might have moved the needle a little bit just getting to that second weekend. But I think, unfortunately for Mike Bray and Notre Dame, that this one, it's a good season, it just didn't do a lot for their reputation.
Yeah, I think that's really kind of the problem. But I at the end of the day, I think a lot of people were anticipating a lot worse season. So really, I think he did a masterful job.
Yeah.
When it's all said and done, and you know, you finished second in the ACC, you've done a good job. You no matter who you are, you've done a good job. So I don't want the loss to really diminish all the success that this team had, and they really had a nice season. So, the one criticism that we've heard continually over the years, Matt, has been, you know, Bray has too short of a bench. He plays seven players usually. Not very often does he get into eight. And, you know, I've been kind of saying this, the same thing. This is going to be Kansas's downfall, is playing seven players for so long, and you just get tired. And it seemed like in that game, you know, that was very much the case. And when you play a press and a team that presses like that, it really wears you down. And I think that this is one particular game where it seemed obvious that, you know, it would have been nice if they had a few other players that they could call on. It's a catch-22 because you want to win games, and when you're playing the ACC, all the games are close. So, you know, that sticking a couple guys in to learn means you could lose the game. And so that's a very difficult decision to make, but in the end, it really doesn't help you out. And, you know, I don't know whether he had that eighth player to play, but I'm sure that he wishes he played that eighth player, and he's going to damn sure wish he played that eighth player starting next year. And I still think next year is going to be a great year, but just having that experience. Do you think, Matt, that maybe he should just bite the bullet and just take his lumps early in the season? You know, it's explainable at that time, but just take your lumps and say, look, I got to find an eighth guy.
Yeah, I mean, I the one plain devil's advocate for him is he might not have an eighth guy to handle the ball against a team like West Virginia, because their sixth or seventh guy, TJ Gibbs, while he's played excellent throughout the entire year, Friday was the first game that he looked overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that wasn't something that he had seen or we had seen from him all year. So I think TJ Gibbs's inability to handle the pressure kind of put him in a catch-22 in terms of wanting to get Farrell a couple more breathers and Vestori a couple breathers, and he just couldn't do that because Gibbs wasn't accountable with the basketball. But I think he could have gotten Elijah Burns and John Mooney a couple more minutes throughout the course of the year. I mean, Burns had already redshirted last year pretty much, and then Mooney, they kept playing at the end of game. So, I mean, why not steal a couple minutes if you're burning their year anyway? So I think he could have done a little bit better, but in terms of just that single game against West Virginia, I'm not sure there's much of anything he could
have
done.
Sure, there's nothing you can do at that point. I agree, but I think if you play the guys early and they get used to, then they're not overwhelmed. Yeah. You know, they're used to that pressure. They've already been in the wars, and so they kind of get what to expect. So You know, that would be my only criticism. And again, I don't think that there's really much to criticize at this point. I think he's really done a great job. And, you know, very underrated coach at Notre Dame. I think he does a fantastic job. So considering all the stuff that he has to battle through, you know, like I said, well, the facilities are not on par with anybody that they play for the most part. You know, it's very difficult to get kids in school. If you think it's tough, you know, for football, it's a lot worse for basketball and baseball and all the other sports. So a lot of the guys that get into Notre Dame football, if a basketball player had the same situation, chances are they aren't getting in. So that's just the reality of it. So, you know, next season, Matt, looks real promising. You know, they lose a little bit in guard play. But, I mean, I think there's a lot of talent coming back on this team. And there's been a rumor that's floated around about a potential transfer coming in. Somebody said something about a big man, but I'm not sure that that's the case. We've certainly have not confirmed anything like that. But if they could get a big man to transfer in, I mean, this could be a very good team next year.
Yeah, I mean, I think that with DJ Harvey coming in, I mean, if DJ Harvey was on this year's team, that would have been excellent.
Yeah.
They would still be playing right now. So,
sure.
I think he's going to come in and help them immediately just with his skill set. And then they will need Rex Fleer to kind of progress to a more scoring role, taking a little bit better shots. But I think he can do that. But, I mean, they should have a little bit more depth. They might not be as talented with their starting five, but it should be a very competitive team next year.
My hunch that the ACC was overrated, I think, definitely came to fruition on this. You know, really, North Carolina's the only team that just barely escaped. And everybody else just not a good showing for the ACC. Are you surprised?
I'm surprised that there's one team in the Sweet 16 from nine teams getting in. I mean, that's kind of incredible after how the national media kind of portrayed the ACC as the toughest conference and so battle-tested, and they couldn't win those close games this weekend. So it was kind of surprising in that area. And then, I mean, when you think about it, the WCC has just as many teams as the ACC in the Sweet 16, and that should never happen. So I don't want to say it's overrated just because I know it was a very good conference. It's just some of these teams got bad draws.
Oh, man, shut up. It was overrated. It just was overrated. Come on, man. You get nine teams in, you only got one of the 16?
I agree.
I'm
with
sorry.
You.
It's overrated. Definitely overrated. So, and North Carolina should have lost yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, it should have.
ACC shouldn't have a team of the Sweet 16.
It's just, there's no question it was overrated. That's not saying that the conference every year is overrated. This year, they were overrated.
I think the talent level was down, too, just because, I mean, this North Carolina team, while it's a very good team, it's not. If you put them against some of the last North Carolina teams last few years, it's not competing. So
I don't think it's as talented as some of the other teams he's had, but I don't think the talent overall in basketball is all that great right now. And so I think they can hang, you know, with a lot of teams. They got guys who can shoot. They got some big men who are solid players. It's just chemistry, and that's really what Duke's problem was. You know, they just didn't quite ever get that chemistry right, and so. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. Now, after watching this weekend, I mean, who do you think has a real chance to win it all?
Man, I honestly don't know just because there's so many teams that they look good for a half and then they played really bad the second half or the first half. So, I mean, Michigan's actually playing very good basketball right now, but I don't know if they have that one player that can kind of carry them if they would meet a Kansas just because you're going to have to score.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, UCLA looks pretty good, but, I mean, they got a buzzsaw against Kentucky where, I mean, I honestly don't know who's going to win that game. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's going to be close to 100 points on either side. So, right now, I mean, I'd have to lean towards Wisconsin as one of the Final Four teams just because they kind of have the easiest road and it's just a different style of basketball, and they're playing very well right now. So I think they'll make it. I think Kansas makes it. I have no idea about the South. I mean, UNC, UCLA, or Kentucky could come out, and then
that's the most exciting bracket right now, definitely.
And then I think it'll come down to Gonzaga or Arizona, whoever wins that game. And, I mean, both those teams looked great, and then they looked bad. So
yeah.
I guess it's kind of – whoever is hot that night.
You talk about Michigan. I swear, I've never seen a team that hot shooting. Man, I mean, they are on fire. It's like, wow, how can you continue that pace? So that's what I don't know, whether they can continue that pace. You can't shoot like that every game. And so that'll be interesting to see what happens with that. You know, KU and Purdue's going to be interesting because Purdue's got such good size. But I think KU's got the ability to stretch them out, and I think they have the best penetrating guard in the country, in Mason. I think he's just tremendous, and I'll keep saying that, and I know you keep rolling your eyes. But
he's such a gamer.
Dude, he is. What are you talking about? I mean, he scores 20 points every game. So you got to like that about a guy. And so anyway, I don't know what's going to happen with that one, though, because they do have good size, and I think size can hurt Kansas. That I'm telling you, that UCLA-Kentucky matchup, that's going to be one heck of a game. I can't wait to see that. And then whoever you know, wins that is probably going to face North Carolina. And I'm going to guess that Kentucky or UCLA will beat North Carolina when it's all said and done. The interesting game, like you said, is going to be Gonzaga and Arizona. That's going to be an interesting game. I just don't know what to think on that one. I really don't. And then I think you're right on Wisconsin. They just seem to have a good team chemistry going right now. So, Jamie, you got any thoughts?
Yeah, well, I thought, I loved watching UCLA play. I mean, I think Lonzo Ball just, I mean, I know he gets like a ton of hype already and everyone's kind of...
You're such a Pac-12 homer. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, he lived up to the hype.
He's a good player. Good. There's no question. And Pac-12 is better than I thought they were. They really are.
Yeah, and
I thought Oregon got lucky. I thought they got lucky, by the way. They certainly did.
They got lucky in the second round, definitely. But I think UCLA and Arizona look like they legitimately could win it both. I mean, obviously, Arizona didn't play great in the second game. But, I was surprised Baylor looked I knew Baylor was going to be pretty good, but I think they have a chance to win that bracket now because that one's wide open.
Yep.
I don't know. I thought, I'm really looking forward to UCLA, Kentucky. I think that's the only one, that bracket's the only one that was chalk, right, where it was all top four seeds are in there. So, that's going to be interesting. I just don't think North Carolina is that good. I think UCL, whoever wins UCLA or Kentucky, I would imagine is probably going to win that game, but win the next game against North Carolina. But I don't know. To me, I like when it doesn't go as planned. Anyways, even though it might screw up my bracket. So the first set of games wasn't too great in terms of that. There wasn't any really buzzer beaters or anything like that. But after that, I thought it was, you know, pretty good on Saturday, Sunday.
I tell you what, those round of 16 or 32, those were some tough games. I mean, nobody really had an easy go. You know, when you watched it, I was like, man, really nobody had an easy go of it. You know, some of the scores turned out a little higher than the actual game showed, you know.
Florida had an easy go with Virginia.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, I guess
Xavier had an easy go with Florida State.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Those ACC teams just did not perform well.
When you're losing by 30 points in the second round, that was not good,
yeah. And then only score, what did they score, 39?
39
Virginia?
Points. Yeah, Division I basketball.
I mean, most girls' high school basketball games score 39 points. So, but yeah, I agree with you. On to football, I thought it was interesting that Notre Dame has a conditioning test the day back after spring break. And I think that's a good thing. I think they've done it before. If I remember, they've done it before, but... to me, I think it's just really important to hold them accountable for their time off. And I think that's what this does. You don't want to go out there and just, you know, look like an idiot. And also, you know, I think it keeps you in check a little bit. So while I don't think it really stopped anybody from having a good time, maybe it stopped them from having too good of a good time. And so I like that. I liked hearing that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the kids had their fun and everything, but they also took a couple days just to make sure they were prepared for the conditioning test. So I think that kind of had an accountability factor, like you were talking about last week, where the first two practices were good for the team to get in before spring break. So I think the conditioning test is good, and like you said, just holds everybody accountable and make sure that they're doing at least something a couple days during the break.
Now Indy has 13 practices to get things going. Jimmy, ask you this question. If you're Kelly, do you come out firing right out of the gate? Do you get physical on that first day and wake them up, or do you kind of ease into this?
I think some of it's based off what they saw on the conditioning, right? If they saw that, you know, everyone looked pretty good and they took it seriously and they're ready to go on that Sunday, then maybe they go a little bit harder on that first practice. But, you know, I think it depends in terms of the hitting. I don't know if they're going to hit that much, but I would say I would be almost 100% sure that they're going to go really fast paced, quick tempo in that first day. They want to get guys moving, get them back into it. You know, make them work really hard. Maybe ease into the hitting a little bit, but definitely, I would expect it to be a really, really fast tempo first day of practice.
Yeah, I think that's probably what we'll see. Now, if I'm Kelly, though, what I do is at the end, it's Oklahoma drill, and I'll tell you why. I think it's important to set that standard right out of the gate that, hey, this is about competing, right? We did not compete well last year, so we're going to go through. We're going to do all our fundamental stuff. We're going to do some 11-on-11. We're going to learn. We're going to install. But at the end of practice on Wednesday, I'm like, let's hit. I want to see how hungry some of you guys are, because we're going to have a physical. You know, we're going to do some physical things on Friday. We're going to do it again on Saturday, and you guys need to be woken up and ready to go for that. So that's what I would do if I were Brian Kelly, is just, you know, let's get some fun in it and let's get some competition in it. And that way they know come Friday and Saturday that it's time to go to work. So I doubt we'll ever really know if that's what happened, but that's just kind of the way I would look at it. Elijah Taylor news, you know, we heard about him getting injured in that first, or it was his second practice, I believe. You know, it sounds like it could be pretty, you know, serious injury. That's not good news for Notre Dame. You know, I think he's a guy that was starting to come on, you know, a guy who could certainly eat some minutes. And this was kind of his time to really show up and be like a solid backup to Tillery at the three technique. And now, you know, sounds like I wouldn't be surprised if all of spring is gone. And if that's the case, that does not help Notre Dame at all at a position they just can't afford to lose guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like Dude Treadway last year, where he was coming on, battling Taylor for that backup spot, then he breaks his foot. So it'd be nice to get those three guys healthy out at the same time, just so you have a little bit of depth, but...
And competition.
I think that's most important.
Yeah, you get those guys competing. You know, you want Elijah Taylor competing with Micah Dutredway and get them going. And that, you know, that I think is really important. And unfortunately, they're going to miss that opportunity. You know, we don't know the full extent of Taylor's injury and whether it's, you know, he's out for a long period of time or a short period of time. But I don't know. I just was not happy hearing that at all. We got a whole bunch of questions from Irish Sports Daily customers, and I wanted to get to those because there were some really good ones this week. First question, when the media are allowed to watch practice, does the staff at ISD get together to determine who will cover certain areas of practice, such as offense, defense, special teams, or is that the way the practice set up, does that dictate it? And I think it depends, Matt, based on if we're inside, then I pretty much have to – look at the offensive side because it's you're way upstairs and you can really only see mostly the defensive side of stuff. Can't see anything on offense. So, and I'm running the camera at the same time. So it's really hard to watch, but also watch what I'm filming at the same time. So I've had to learn to kind of take mental notes while I'm doing this, because Matt has a pen and paper and writing all this down and I'm having to do it in my head. And if you know anything about my head, it's not very good.
You're just a grinder, Mike.
I just cannot remember things very well. So anyway, that's the way it usually works when we're inside. When we're outside, you know, then we can split up a little bit. And this weekend will be interesting because both practices will probably be inside, but we'll be on because the clinic will actually be there to watch a lot of stuff. So that will be – we'll probably get a real good view of what to expect, and we should, you know, we'll break it down pretty well and have a pretty good idea. Jamie will probably be defense because that's his specialty. I'll be offense, and Matt usually does the particulars, you know, who won the one-on-one and in this and who won the one-on-one on that, how they lined up, those types of things. That's
Ball
usually
is Justin Yoon for most
of the practice. Yeah, that's pretty much what he does.
I'm just trying to search for a quotable quote from Harry Hiestand during practice.
Yeah, well, good luck finding one. At least one you can print. There's a lot of quotables. There's not many you can print. All right, next question. Flashback 10 years ago, what important facts in the spring of 2007 should have foreshadowed that disastrous 9-loss season on the horizon? Well, for that question, that's so long ago. I mean, I couldn't even begin to tell you other than to say we knew we were going to have a starting quarterback who was a true freshman, didn't know anything. So we knew that that was probably the case. And then on top of that, you know, I think the job was just given to him, you know, and because it was given to him, I think that that really was the deciding factor in 3-9. I think that that was a big mistake by Charlie Weiss. I think everybody knew that the job was given to him, and I think that that really hurt team chemistry. Your second question is, today, what facts this spring may most signal a historic turnaround, like a 12-win season could occur in 2017? Well,
Brandon Wimbush.
You can bring a couple more players. I mean, I don't know if there's a 12-win season.
I don't know if there's a 12-win.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Maybe there is. You know, maybe things go the right way. I'll tell you, losing guys like Elijah Taylor, it ain't going to help. So, and I'm not saying Elijah Taylor's a great player, because I don't think he is at this point, but he has the potential to be a solid contributor for Notre Dame. So, I don't think there's anything that I would say that points to this is a 12-win season at this point. We can all hope so. And you know, not many people expected 2012 to be a 12-win season either. So you just never know. Next question. Mike, in your opinion, why has Kelly not asked for or been so slow to get additional resources in the recruiting office, like you've always said? People that can keep up on Plan B recruits you know, it appears that most everything Brian Kelly's ever requested, he's received, and just curious why this has not been such a critical issue. And to be honest, I think that's probably it. I'm not sure Brian Kelly's really felt it's a huge issue until maybe recently. You know, I think you'll see in the end maybe a few more people added there in the end, but I just don't think he's really ever felt like they were lacking in that. I've always felt they have been. You know, I think that the guys they have do a fantastic job for what they do, because it's been very, very difficult to, you know, do all this stuff without having, you know, some of the people that were there. So I'd like to see, you know, at least one or two more people added to that team, and maybe even three if the third person would be more of a creative mind. You know, I think creative mind is real important in this game anymore, because everybody's getting bombarded with everything. You know, they're getting bombarded with all kinds of memes and all kinds of things that are drawn up, and somehow you got to stand out amongst everybody else, and that's really hard to do. And let's just be honest, I don't think a lot of football coaches are artistically inclined. No. And so that's really you really need to find some people who are smart in that regard. And I think, you know, teams like Ohio State have done a good job of that. I think Michigan's doing a good job of that right now. There are a lot of teams that have really kind of grabbed that by the horns. And, you know, does it make a huge difference? I don't know, but I know it can't hurt.
Yeah, I mean, it's just about branding yourself on social media, and Notre Dame's just doing an absolutely terrible job at that right now.
Anybody.
Their social media stuff is they keep reposting the same videos that they've posted for the last year. I mean, they got James Onuwalu talking about Harry Hiestand. Like, who the hell wants to hear James Onuwalu talk about Harry Hiestand? And then, I mean, they've just kind of just reposted and reposted and reposted the same Bleacher Report videos that they were rolling out in the fall. And, I mean, like, I can get kind of circling back around a time or two. But, I mean, when you were posting that stuff every month. I mean, it's
you're not moving
ahead. I mean,
I agree, and they don't have anybody in that position right now, and that's what I said last week, Matt. I mean, gosh, this guy was gone, or this person, it was a woman, was gone in December. It's March. What's gone on here? I don't know. And again, I think it's a sense of urgency. You got to get this stuff filled. And I'm just surprised it isn't filled. But hey,
I think part of the problem too is Notre Dame is just not very competitive when it comes to throwing out the money towards these jobs. I think they undervalue them a little bit, from what I've heard. But I mean, I think they need to up the money just a little bit, just to make it competitive with these other schools. And I mean, I do realize there's probably limited offer space in the Goog. So if those rumors of an expansion or a new Goog are true, then I think
it's true.
That should be something to focus on, is just expanding the office space for a bigger recruiting office staff, so that everyone can have a desk or everyone can have their own office.
Put them out in the hall. I don't care where they work. Let's get to work. You know,
it's crazy.
It's really tight up there. I agree. And, you know, again, probably not forward thinking, you know, but then this is also the place that half the size of the media room in the stadium. How that makes any sense, I'll never understand. But, hey, it is what it is. All right, so next question. What happened with Josh Moore? I went back and listened again to his Power Hour interview, and no way did I read ND would not be making his first cut. So what were your expectations coming out of that show? I was kind of surprised, because he talked so positively about, you know, Todd Light. And I was really surprised they didn't make the cut. But, you know, we'd heard long that, you know, he's a silent commit to Florida State, that is probably going to end up staying down there at Florida State. So we'd kind of heard that. But, you know, I thought Notre Dame would be a much bigger player in this. You know, certainly not 13th or 14th or whatever. But it just is what it is. You know, I don't know. I'm surprised. You know him pretty well, Matt. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I was completely shocked. I thought he was a lock to at least get in that, or Notre Dame was a lock to get into his top group. I mean, I had talked to him for quite a while, and I mean, we had a pretty good relationship, but I'm not sure I buy that he was a silent commit to Florida State at this point. I wouldn't be surprised if they ended up with him, but I'm very curious on what happened there, because he's gone kind of quiet on the Notre Dame side of things, so I'm not sure if something came back where they couldn't take him because of grades, or if he just stopped having interest in Notre Dame altogether for whatever reason. But I mean, it wasn't a good sign, just because he's a kid that they should have gotten on campus for at least one visit, and they never got him up. So I don't know. I mean, he made an effort to drive 3 hours to San Antonio just to watch the Shamrock Series game. So I mean, there's some initiative there. And I mean, like the reader said, I mean, if you listen to Power Hour, I mean, it's pretty clear that he
seemed very interested.
That's not him being nice and saying nice things about Notre Dame. That's a kid that has legitimate interest in Notre Dame.
Well, and he seemed like a Notre Dame kid. And it's one of those things that I think if they could somehow get him on campus, they'd have a shot. They really would, because he would fit in very well with the current players at Notre Dame. And I think that's what they were hoping for, but it didn't happen. So my hope is Todd Light gets on the phone and, you know, tries to, you know, say, hey, what's going on here? You know, I thought we were in this. Yeah. And just see if there's a way to get back in the race and see what happens. Long way to go. You know, I guess we'll just wait and see what happens. This is a very good question. I'm sorry I don't have a really good answer for you. Hey, Mike, do you ever hear what the new coaches think of the current talent level on the roster? I wonder what guys like Elko, Alexander, Clark Lee, Long, Polian think about the roster talent and depth. And I remember when Kelly started, even though he came from Cincinnati, he seemed to think that we lacked playmakers and depth. Yeah, I really haven't heard much on that. You know, the only thing I've heard is they like the talent they have at DB. They think they have some good talent there, you know, enough to be elite players. They like a lot of the linebackers they have currently. I think that they're a little bit concerned about what they have, you know, in the future, and so they're trying to address that. But I've heard that. I haven't heard much about anything else, though. And it's been I don't know. I think you probably, they probably don't know at this point exactly what they have.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a great benefit to go on the record and say one way or the other for a coach. So.
But even off the record, yeah.
So I'm.
Yeah. Jimmy, you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I think what you said, Mike, about them probably not really having a full opinion yet. They probably don't know enough about the guys. And I'm sure if they say something, publicly this spring or, we might hear some more stuff privately, but publicly, if they say anything this spring, it'll probably be more of with an intention to motivate somebody. So say if, I don't expect this to happen, but just say if Niles Morgan wasn't playing up to the level they expected him to this spring, I'm sure they'd say something about it and kind of, push him. Maybe some of the veteran guys, they would say something about, but I mean, I don't know if we're going to hear that much because I think really they're probably just learning. They're learning a lot of who the guys are, basically, right? Like it's the first time working with them, and I don't think that they probably want to share too much because they don't know enough right now.
Yeah. How much of the offense and defense actually gets installed over spring versus just finding out who can play what position and practicing basics like tackling and blocking techniques? I think in a normal situation, they'll get quite a bit of, install in, offense and defense because it's something they've already known, I think in a normal situation with a lot of coaches returning, there'd be a lot of it. But right now, I'm going to guess there's less of it because they're trying to find out who can play. They know that they weren't necessarily a very good fundamental team last year. So I think you'll see more, focus on fundamentals this spring. I think you'll see much more of those types of drills being run than we normally would. And probably less of install on offense. But to be honest with you, I think it's going to be a fairly basic offense anyway because of a brand new quarterback, because you have veteran offensive linemen and you have three very quality backs, maybe even four very quality backs at this point. I think it's going to be a pretty basic offense when it's all said and done. Jimmy, any thoughts?
Yeah, I don't think they'll it just depends how much the guys are picking it up. Anytime with a new, it's new everything, right? New offense, new defense, and even new special teams. So anything what they want to know kind of what guys can pick up and, they might test that later on. I think there will be like a decent chunk, but definitely not like the majority of the offense and defense will be put in. But they also have to have at least get an idea of evaluate how the players fit into the scheme and not just what they can handle physically, but maybe what they can handle mentally as well. So I think, there's some of it, but definitely most of it is going to be in the summer, in August, that's when they're going to put more into it. And then remember too, in the summer now they get to spend a little bit more time with players. So, some of that probably will probably be used for it as well.
I think there was a large install process in the month and a half before the spring ball started. Mm-hmm. I think I have heard that the Chip Long and the staff put in time with the players when the players asked. So I think just based off of what we saw in the tempo drills and stuff, I mean, that offense was not what they were doing last year. So they've had time to work on the new stuff, the basic stuff like you guys were talking about. Obviously, the offense is getting a little more simpler. So they've clearly had – they've worked on the basic stuff to get through spring ball already. So I think that kind of puts them ahead of kind of the install process, so to speak, just in relation to spring practice.
All right. Moving on, what's the difference between how Brian Kelly uses tight ends in his offense versus how Chip Long uses them in his offense? I don't think there's a whole lot of difference. I think you'll see more kind of H-back stuff in Chip Long. He seems to send guys in motion a lot. But Brian Kelly was doing a lot of that last year as well. It'd be interesting to see how much is flexed out, especially with a guy like Alizé Jones. Is he going to be playing more of a slot role? I think you'll see more two tight end sets because I think they're going to like their options there more than they did before. And I'm not sure you're going to have three or four great wide receivers this year. And so, you know, when you have two quality tight ends and you're going to focus on the running game a little bit, which we anticipate, I think that's what you'll see. Jamie, any thoughts?
Yeah, I don't think there's really that much difference. You know, I was going to say a little bit about the H-back as well, that they run it a bit more, maybe motion out of that to the perimeter as a blocker, sometimes as a receiver as well. But really not that big of a difference. Maybe a little bit more two tight end sets. But, I mean, Brian Kelly has run a lot of two tight end sets at Notre Dame as well. I just don't think in the last couple of years they felt confident with the two tight ends that they've been playing, right? When they've had two quality tight ends, they played a lot of two tight end, right? So I guess we'll just see how it goes this year. But I don't really think there's that much of a difference. Nothing should be too foreign for them, at least.
Next question. I hope you guys cover indie basketball recruiting like you do cover football. We were about 6'9" center from a Final Four this year. Put Zach August in on that team, and they would go all the way. I don't know about that, but I think they would have been a very difficult out. I think that that's really what they were missing. But to be honest, Notre Dame's guards had to shoot better than they did. And I don't think that they shot very well in the last tournament. And again, I think they were a little tired. You know, Matt, you know, as you said, playing deep into that tournament tires you out. It just does. You know, and those were some difficult games that they had to play and win. And but I do think that that, you know, they were one big guy away from being a very quality team. We do cover basketball recruiting. I think we do a pretty good job. You know, Kristen's usually really, really well versed in that. It's just there just isn't a lot of action in basketball because, you know, most of the time they only have, what, 4 or 5 players
Tops. You're not trying to fill out an 85 scholarship thing. You're
So there's just 12. Not as much news out there as there normally is when it comes to basketball or when it comes to football. So, but I think we do a very, very good job of covering it. Next question, who are two or three guys currently being recruited in this class that are really undervalued by the scouting services? We'll start with you, Jamie. You're watching a lot of film. Who do you think's a better player than their rankings?
I think one is the tight end, George Takacs. I think that's how you say his last name. Kid from Florida. You know, I just have watched him a bunch of times now, and I think that the more I watch him, the more I like him. You know, he's 6'7", already 230 pounds. A lot of these guys are kind of underdeveloped. He's a little bit further along. He looks like he can maybe weigh maybe 265, 270 one day too. Also a really good athlete. I think he has the top spark score out of any tight end that's tested at any of those Nike / the opening regionals so far this year. You know, he definitely has to get stronger. Isn't the best inline blocker in terms of being strong at the point of attack, but he's a really good athlete, catches the ball really well. Like, definitely not just a possession guy. Could probably offer a little bit more, you know, in intermediate range too. And I think he's a 3-star kid, but he's got like a 4-star offer list. And I bumped him up to a 4-star. I think he's a 4-star kid in my opinion. You know, I've talked a little bit about how the offensive line class isn't really that good this year, and at least in my opinion, some of the kids that they have, a lot of these scouting places have 5-stars. I don't really see them as 5-stars, but one guy that I really like more than some of the other people is Nicholas Pettit-Frere, who's going to visit Notre Dame pretty soon, I think. And I think he's a bit undersized. He's not, you know, it would be a little bit better if he was 290 pounds. And I think he's probably around, you know, 260, 270 range. So that's probably why maybe he's not like a 5-star kid. But I think he's got maybe the high ceiling out of anyone in the class. I have him a little bit higher rated than some other people. And I think he can be, you know, a true blue, like, stud left tackle one day, you know, and even though he's a bit undersized too, he's pretty nasty too in terms of a run blocker and can be an elite pass blocker. I really, really like him. The other guy I think is Matt's boy, Joseph Osai, the defensive end from Texas. You know, and I mean, we'll see if Notre Dame can get in the mix with him. I think he might want to stay in state, but if they can get him out on campus, at least get a look at Notre Dame, that would be huge. Cause I think he's, you know, really, really talented player, really good athlete, kind of what you're looking for in terms of just being a long, quick, twitchy guy that's, he's going to put on a lot of weight later on. You know, he's just a little bit skinny right now, but, really just like a natural pass rusher type that I think has a really high ceiling, can be a really, really good player. You know, might not be, a top 100 guy now, but could easily end up being a top 100 guy, maybe even a top 50 guy by the end of the process.
All right, Matt, you got any thoughts? Anyone you want to add?
Yeah. I mean, I won't go as in depth as Jamie, but I think that Treshawn Harrison, I mean, he's a four-star by some services, but I think he's truly an elite talent. He's very explosive with the ball in his hands. He can score from any part of the field. And then when you combine the fact that he can play DB too, he just has a lot of versatility. And then there's a corner out of Georgia, Kyler McMichael. He's pretty big. I believe he is, 6'1", 185, but he's a very well-put-together athlete. So, I mean, he has the potential that he could play a nickel or even kind of a rover if they're going trying to get a little bit more speed on the field. But he would be somebody that Notre Dame would greatly benefit from if he ended up in South Bend. But those are my two underrated guys, other than Osai, obviously.
No Anthony Schwartz?
No.
I'm so, what? That was your guy, man. What are you talking about? Three-star, can flat run? Well, they don't have much of a shot at him. I think that's probably the reason more than anything.
I mean, when you're that fast, you shouldn't come to Notre Dame, to be honest. You need to...
All right, now you're just killing the track program. Way to go, Matt.
I mean, I'm just saying, if you're running a 10-2 in high school,
yeah,
you should probably consider that as part of your future,
way
too.
To go, Matt. Thank you. Matt just told him not to come, I guess, so...
Yeah.
All right. Next question. Biggest assistant coach loss from last year. I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, it just depends. You know, it just depends at this point. I mean, I think Denbrock's a loss. You know, I think he's a good coach. There's no question about it. I think he worked hard in recruiting most of the time. You know, I'm not sure he did last year or any of them really did last year. But I think leading up to it, a very, very hard worker in that regard. I think he's probably the biggest loss. But it could be Sanford, you know, because we don't know how good Tommy Reese is going to be as a quarterback's coach. So I'd say those are probably the two that stand out the most.
Yeah, I mean, I'm leaning towards Sanford just because I don't think he ever really got a full shot to run his offense at Notre Dame. So you kind of don't know what he has. So if he ends up taking the world by storm at Western Kentucky this year, then you're kind of going to look back at that and be like, he probably should have got a shot. But I think, like you kind of touched on, his quarterback development was pretty good. I mean, he turned DeShon Kizer into a potential first-round pick. So I think they'll miss him just in the quarterback room and potentially as an offensive coordinator, but I mean, that time will tell on that.
This is a very interesting question here. Best opposing head coach on this year's schedule. That's a very good question. Jamie, we'll start with you.
I had Ken Neomatalolo. I think he's, mostly because I didn't want to say David Shaw. But, no, I do think Ken Neomatalolo is a very good head coach. I mean, he's obviously been, you know, I mean, Navy, like the question said, they, you know, they not the best team Notre Dame will face, but Navy, I mean, there's a reason Navy wasn't competitive or, you know, lost like 40-something straight years to Notre Dame. And you know, then now they're, you know, challenging to beat Notre Dame every year. And a big reason why is, you know, Paul Johnson before that, and then Neomatalolo, you know, he's done a tremendous job there. And I mean, just year after year, it doesn't matter. They lose people and it's just, you know, you would have thought they would have been worse without Keenan Reynolds this year. And I think they were on their third string quarterback when they played Notre Dame. Didn't stop them from being Notre Dame this year. You know, he's just really done a great job with the system that they have for the guys that they can get at Navy, and he's just a heck of a football coach.
I think I agree. I think he's the best that they face. So,
Jamie, you're saying that the men that defend the United States of America are badasses and can do their job.
Well, I guess if you want to say that, we can go in that direction too. Yeah.
Well, let's just put it this way: if we had to kick Canada's ass, we could.
Yeah.
Well, there's no doubt about that.
Sorry. I just had to throw it out there. All right. It's interesting when it comes to number two. And to be honest, I think Clay Helton's going to be a heck of a coach. I really do. I think call me crazy, but I think this guy gets what USC needs to be. And that's a tough, tough run-oriented team and a team that plays good, sound defense. And I think he's done a good job recruiting. It's so funny when you think about, two teams were at the same place at 1-3, and now all of a sudden one guy's in a really good position and another guy isn't. It's just really weird because everybody thought for sure that Clay Helton would be fired, and I think he's going to end up being a good coach when it's all said and done. He's going to be a slow builder. It's not something that it's just going to go overnight type of thing, but I think he's smart enough to know what it takes to win there. And, it's not all flash and glitz. And I think that's where they've really struggled is, they were hiring guys that, would bring in a lot of talent, but they wouldn't bring in any toughness. And I think Clay Helton is going to get that figured out. And that's bad news, because he can get a lot of talent. But hopefully Notre Dame will get their talent as well. Who's your second? Who do you think's the second best?
I would say David Shaw's the best, actually.
Smoking crack.
Just because, When Harbaugh left, people thought there would be a gradual decline of Stanford football, but he's maintained it. And while he's still not probably getting the talent Harbaugh got there, I mean, he's still making them competitive. And if you put them against Navy, I would take Stanford every time. Second head coach, kind of going out on a limb, I'm just going to say Dave Clawson. I mean, he's done a heck of a job at Wake Forest, and then when you consider that the opposing teams knew what he was going to do.
Yeah.
I'm very interested just to see what kind of success he can have going forward. I mean, he's not going to win a lot of football games at Wake Forest, but if he can do well enough to get a big-time job, I think he'll do pretty well. So, I mean, it's kind of a wild-card answer, but I'm curious to see how he does this year without...
totally disrespecting Ken. Coach Ken, you're just disrespecting.
Yeah. And Kirby Smart.
Yeah. Well, I know it's not Mark Richt. I know that. So that'll be interesting. this question, I get this a lot, but I actually have an answer for it, but it's not going to be somebody Notre Dame really recruited. The most egregious bagman story you ever heard. And that would be Albert Means. I don't know. Jimmy, you remember Albert Means?
I remember him, the Alabama kid from Memphis.
Did he end? Yeah, he ended up. Did he go to Alabama? I can't remember.
Well, they were the one who paid for him, weren't they?
Well, basically, it was a deal where the high school coach was selling trips and basically selling everything. So you had to pay the high school coach X amount of dollars just to even get a visit out of him. And then, of course, there was a big price tag at the end. Guess how much money Albert ended up getting out of that or his family? Zero. That was the most egregious one. I mean, you want to talk about slavery. That's what it was. And it was a black coach who did this. It was terrible. It was the worst thing I've ever heard ever happen in college football. And it was just unbelievable. And, Albert was a pretty nice kid. Notre Dame recruited him a little bit early, but it became obvious that, one, he probably wasn't going to, come, and two, Notre Dame wasn't going to get in that race for sure. But it, it was sad. It really was a sad situation. So that was the worst one I had ever heard, and it was not good. And poor Albert never really ended up doing much anyway. He really wasn't that great of a player when it was all said and done, but he was known as the number one guy at the time as far as defensive lineman goes. So, next question. This might be a tough question given the limited time you guys have had to break down Elko's defense, But from what you have seen from his previous teams, what type of offenses give him, the fits? And who do we play this year that might run a similar version of that? Jamie, what are your thoughts?
I think that there's not a lot of teams that really like specifically give them trouble. I think, you know, more so than any other defense. I think mostly when you look at it, it's teams with more depth that run a ton of plays. But I mean, you could say that about any defense that has to face, you know, a Clemson or whatever. And I think he's coached against Clemson before and done a pretty good job where they've kind of shut Clemson down a bit. I think, you know, you look at versus Louisville this year where they shut Louisville down basically for three quarters and then just wore down at the end of the game. And then Louisville kind of exploded in the fourth quarter. And Wake Forest just doesn't have that kind of talent to, you know, stick with them for four quarters. So I don't know if I didn't think he was, you know, there was anything that really, he coaches a defense that is specifically built to stop, to help prevent big plays against a spread. You know, that's why they run a 4-2-5 out of their base. So I don't think there's too much that really overly that I could target saying that this is the type of offense that gives them the most problems. Although I will say, an offense that runs the play clock down and wants to run a lot of checks, and that works right into the hands of Mike Elko's defense, and they're going to run a lot of games and confuse a lot of quarterbacks that way. So I think, you know, if the faster you play, probably the harder it is for his defense to defend. But you could say that for just about every defense.
All right, moving on. Is there a player from the 215 recruiting class that did not play last year that you think will have an unexpected positive impact next year? I'm just trying to think. Matt, you got anybody?
He played 15 plays last year, but Khalid Kareem would be the first guy that pops into my mind. Him and Julian Aquara. I mean, mm-hmm. I think Dalen Hayes will be the best of the bunch this year, but I think Kareem and Aquara, I mean, while they played limited snaps, I mean, I think they're going to have the biggest impact this year.
I can just see Tony Jones over there just stewing right now.
This is true.
He didn't mention Tony Jones. I'm going to go with Tony Jones. Jamie, your thoughts?
I was going to say Tony Jones, but I almost expect him to have a positive impact. So I think out of a guy that maybe people aren't expecting to, I could see Ade Ogundeji. I think he still probably has a decent amount of developing to do, but just as a guy that kind of no one really expects to really do much, and you know, we've heard some positive things about him, and where he's at right now, and I think he's a good athlete and someone they obviously need people to step forward on the defensive line. So just out of like guys that that actually did redshirt last year, he might be someone to watch this spring and in fall camp, as someone who can maybe in the mix and possibly get in the two deep this fall.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to see what happens with him, because I think Aquara will probably be more situational third down pass rush type guy, where Ade could play first and second down. And you're right, we have heard good things about him, his progress as far as his body goes, his attitude, wants to be a good player. Those are usually the good signs heading into this. So he's going to be a guy we're certainly going to watch here the next week and see what we see out of him.
He looks the part right now.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I still think he's probably a year away from really
having
that type of impact. But, I mean, like, I wouldn't be surprised if he was in the rotation at some point this year.
Yeah. Last question for the day. How tall and thick is Brandon Wimbush, really? What are your thoughts on his durability, given BK's track record with quarterbacks at Notre Dame? Is Wimbush size the same as it was listed last year? Not even close. So he's a lot bigger. And where I noticed him most was probably his lower body. Didn't you think, Matt? I mean, his lower body is much thicker, which is going to allow him to handle that pounding that he's going to take in the running game. And we'll see. I mean, he's at least 6'2". I would think he's 6'2". I mean, I really do. And then, we'll just see what happens. But He's certainly thicker. I don't know what they had him listed. Was it 210? I don't remember what they had him listed.
Well, they had him at like 215 last year.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's a solid 225 right now.
Yeah, he's a big kid. I'm surprised. They really did a nice job putting on some lower body weight. So I'm so anxious to watch him. I can't wait to be able to just sit through a whole practice and watch what he can do, because I just think he has the potential to be just a dynamite player. You know, I really think he has that kind of magic ability that not many kids have. Extremely explosive, very fast, big, huge arm. Probably the biggest arm I've seen here at Notre Dame. I can't think of anybody who had a stronger arm. I really can't.
Everett's close.
But, you know,
I mean, Everett had a cannon.
He had a pretty strong arm, but, you know, and I'm trying to think. Klassen could get it up there pretty good at times. He had some pretty good juice on his ball, but just trying to think if there's anybody else. You know, Brady Quinn was just kind of average arm strength. I think his arm strength was overrated, but he certainly improved as a deep ball passer, Brady Quinn did, but that was still kind of one of his, that inaccuracy. But I'm just trying to think if there's anybody else that had that kind of an arm that I remember seeing. I really don't. So, you know, I think the potential to be a great player is there. It's just, can you get it to him? And I think they'll ease him into the season with hopefully a sound running game, and then he'll start making plays and play action. And I think that's where he's going to be a dynamite player, is in play action. So
I wouldn't worry about his durability. I mean,
yeah,
Kelly's done a very good job of, I mean, even back with Golson, he was smart at picking the spots to run him. And with Kaiser, he did the same thing. And, I mean, Malik was just a freak injury. I mean, that's going to happen. It's not a durability factor. It's Quentin Nelson falling on your ankle.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I wouldn't worry too much about that, about Wimbush.
All right, folks, that's going to be it for the show. Hope you enjoyed that. We will be back next week with Power Hour. We'll have a lot to talk about, because we'll have some good look at the Irish, and I'm looking forward to it. Wanted to mention once again, sign up for Irish Sports Daily. Go to the front page. We're running that $19.99 special. If you're a new customer or a former customer, you'll have a chance to sign up for the $19.99. And contact me if you're interested, but once again, advertising with the podcast, MikeFrank18@sbcglobal.net. Give you all the details on that. Looking forward to it, and I can't wait for this week. Very excited about it. Real quick, one question for you guys. Who do you think we're going to be talking about on Monday?
Probably Gonzaga.
Jeez, here you go.
Probably Brandon Wimbush.
All right. Jamie, who do you think?
I was gonna say Brandon Wimbush too. I know that. Sorry, it probably should be more interesting, but I just think, you know, he's the person we want to see the most of, and you know, hopefully he looks great. I mean, either good or bad.
I mean, I think he's just in a position where he can impress you after two practices. I'm not sure you can really get that from a lot of the other positions.
Yeah, well, we'll see. It'll be interesting. I'm hoping it's Jerry
Hopefully
Tillery.
Hopefully a D lineman.
That's what I'm saying. I hope it's Jerry Tillery. But I guess we'll see. All right, folks, that's going to be it. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week on Power Hour.
You've been listening to Power Hour, presented by IrishSportsDaily.com, where you can sign up for a premium subscription. Follow the Fighting Irish throughout the year on Twitter as well at ISD Update. And to listen to archive shows, visit iTunes and search for Notre Dame Power Hour.